The most important thing that happened to me was not being physically transported. The moves from Baltimore to the Bronx to Valley Forge didn't change my way of thinking. What changed was that I found myself surrounded by people, starting with my mom, grandparents, uncles, and aunts, and leading to a string of wonderful role models and mentors who kept pushing me to see more than what was directly in front of me, to see the boundless possibilities of the wider world and the unexplored possibilities within myself. People who had taught me that no accident of birth, not being black or relatively poor, being from Baltimore or the Bronx or fatherless, would ever define me or limit me. In other words, they helped me to discover what it means to be free. As I wrote at the outset of this book, the chilling truth is that Wes's story could have been mine. The tragedy is that my story could have been his. My only wish, and I know Wes feels the same, is that the boys and girls who come after us will know this same freedom. It's up to us, all of us, to make a way for them. I think that section means so much to me simply because it really is the larger theme and the larger hope that I wanted people to take away from this book, that it's about much more than just these two kids. It's about much more than just one neighborhood. It's about much more than just one socioeconomic group or one race or one generation. But it's really about all of us. It's about the decisions that we make in our lives, the people we have in our lives who help us to make those decisions, and about what the consequences and you know, either the joys or the failures of these decisions and what it means to us as a larger society. And so I thought that section really underlined that.
You and the other Wes Moore grew up in very difficult circumstances in Baltimore and not far from each other. You ended up working for former U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, being a successful businessman, and speaking at the 2008 Democratic National Convention. Meanwhile, the other Wes Moore is serving a life sentence in prison for the murder of a police officer during a botched burglary. How did you first learn about this man?
Well, the first way I learned about him was actually through wanted posters. I was actually in South Africa, and my mother gave me a call, and she said, there are wanted posters all over your neighborhood, and the police are looking for a guy wanted in connection with the murder of a police officer. And it says, if you see him, do not approach, because he's assumed to be armed and very dangerous. And that was how I first learned about the other Wes Moore. But then the more I read up on it, I read newspaper articles because this story was a pretty big deal in Baltimore for a collection of different reasons. The more I learned about this crime and this tragedy that ended up happening with the death of this off-duty police officer, the more I learned that Wes and I had so much more in common than just our names. The fact that we were living in the same neighborhood, the fact that we were around the same age, that we both grew up in single-parent households, that we both had academic and disciplinary troubles growing up. And so I started thinking to myself, so how does this happen? How do you get two kids from similar backgrounds and similar circumstances who end up going in two completely different places? And that was how the process really began when I first reached out to him.
Okay, so how?
Well, one thing I learned throughout this process is, there is no, people say that, like, so what was the one thing? Fact is, the one thing I learned about this process is there is no one thing. Raising kids is amazingly complicated. And when you happen to raise kids in some of the most dangerous communities of our country, it's that much more complicated. But I do know there are a few things that really do matter. I mean, education matters. Family matters. Mentors matter. And high expectations matter. These are just some of the factors that I think really do play into what kind of conclusions that we'll see for our young people as they're going through this journey of life.
What sort of expectations did you initially have about Wes Moore?
Honestly, my first initial expectations of Wes is I didn't think he'd even write back. I didn't know, I couldn't understand why I was even writing him, so I really wasn't sure why he would write me back.
You wrote him while he was in prison.
While he was in prison, yeah, while he was serving his life sentence. And then when he wrote me back, it was, when the letter I received back from him was one of the most interesting and articulate letters that I've ever received, and that letter only begged more questions. And so that's how that one letter turned into dozens of letters, those dozens of letters turned into dozens of visits, and how now I've known Wes for over 7 years. And so that was really how the process began. But I don't know what the expectations really were. I'm not sure I really had many expectations because I wasn't even sure if he'd write back at first. But when he did, it really, that's what kind of, led to this longer relationship that's been built.
Well, I have this belief that, exposing yourself to so many different groups of people, even if they're not like you, is a very healthy thing. It helps you grow. How did getting to know Wes, how did that really help you have a better understanding of your own life?
It's a great question. I think one thing that really helped me do was it helped me to better appreciate my life and appreciate the people in my life. There are a whole lot of people who made tremendous sacrifices on my behalf. There are a lot of people who quite honestly saw something in me before I even saw it in myself. There's a lot of people who really gave a lot of, you know, whether it be their time, their resources, their energy, their faith in me. And this process has helped me to be a lot more reflective and a lot more thankful than I was before, because in many cases these things were happening unbeknownst to me. And so that's one thing I think was really important for me to go through in this process, was for me to just really have a better appreciation of just how many people sacrificed and just what they sacrificed on my behalf.
He has a child. You have a child. Do you ever feel survivor's guilt?
You know, I don't feel survivor's guilt per se. I feel blessed. I feel thankful. I'm really thankful for the amount of people that helped when they didn't have to. I'm thankful for the support I received, but it's not a sense of survivor's guilt. What it is, though, it's a real commitment to do something. It's a real commitment to be part of a bigger solution. You know, I understand that blessings don't come in isolation. They come with a real sense of responsibility that comes along with it. And so that's why I really wanted to try not just to put together the book, but really try to put together a larger call to action, that people understand we have a larger responsibility than just ourselves. We've got a bigger responsibility than just taking care of ourselves. And if we embrace that, if we remember that, then we've done our job. Then we've done everything we've been asked to do, and then we know that we've lived a fulfilled life. And so that's the thing that I really feel is really a sense of thankfulness and a sense of responsibility to do something with that.
So in the last year or so since the book was released, yeah, what kind of impact do you think this has had on youth in this country, especially in terms of giving back to their own communities?
Yeah. I've been so humbled. I mean, we literally have received, you know, thousands of letters from parents and teachers and students around the country about how they've made it part of curriculum and how they're using it inside of their community centers or churches. And it's just been so humbling to see that. One thing we're working on now is for colleges. Colleges have selected the book as their freshman year read, where they're having all their freshmen come in and read the book and then discuss it. And dozens of schools have selected, and I've been very honored. But one thing I've told colleges is that, you know, I'll come and do a Q&A. I'll come and meet your students, and that's fine. But there needs to be, I want to be consistent with the theme of the book. I want it to be a larger call to action. And so we've been doing service projects with college freshmen and college sophomores all over the country. And they're identifying what is an issue in your community that you're wrestling with, and what can you do about it? How can you actually take your intellectual energy and your intellectual capital and really move the needle on an issue that has permeated your society, it's permeated your community? And so seeing how, whether it be students from the University of Louisville or Virginia Commonwealth or Cal State Bakersfield or Marquette or wherever, or Goucher or Johns Hopkins, I mean, seeing how all these different students from all over the country, in every region of the country, are taking this call to action seriously has probably, in my thoughts, been the most fulfilling part of this entire process.